If you're enjoying this podcast, please consider leaving a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It really helps me out a lot. Cheers.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
In today's episode, the four M's of subtle foreshadowing. What are the four M's? Ooh, well, not so subtly. I'm going to tell you about them a bit later. So today's episode is all about how do you give information to readers without them being consciously aware. Subtlety is a tricky art, but it is critical to foreshadowing. And that's exactly what we're going to discuss in today's episode. Hello and welcome to the Novel Analyst Podcast. My name is Jed Hearn, author of Fires of the Dead, and every episode it is my job to analyze a story to help you become a better writer. Today's episode is titled Harry Potter by J.K. Rowling, Disguising Exposition. Quickly before we get into the episode, I just wanted to let you know about Fires of the Dead, which is my debut fantasy novella, has just come out on September 20th, and it's already started getting some really excellent reviews in. And you can check those reviews out on the Amazon page, which is linked to in the show's description. So, Fires of the Dead is about Wisp, a pyromancer, who is a magician who draws energy from fires to make his own flames. He's also a criminal, one job away from retirement, and it can't come bloody soon enough. Leading his misfit crew, Wisp ventures into a charred and barren forest to find a relic that could change the realm forever. But they aren't the only ones on the hunt, and the forest isn't as barren as it seems. A jaded gang leader longing for retirement, a bloodthirsty magician with a lust for power, a brutish fighter who's smarter than he looks, a young thief desperate to prove herself, a cowardly navigator with secrets that won't stay buried. Fires of the Dead is a standalone dark fantasy novella with a unique magic system, and if you're wanting a fast-paced fantasy read, it is the book for you. So there is a link to that in the show notes, or you can just go to jedhearn.com/firesofthedead, or just search it on Amazon. So today we're going to be discussing the Harry Potter series as a whole. So this is your spoiler warning for the whole series, not just one book in particular. Like I mentioned in the introduction, today is all about subtle foreshadowing. How can you set things up without readers being overly aware that they're being set up? Well, before we get into some specific tactics for that, I think it's useful to zoom out and consider the macro of this. So, what is the aim of subtle foreshadowing? What is the aim of disguising exposition? For me, it's about a couple of things. The first is that you never want readers to feel cheated. It's a horrible feeling as a reader to spend 500 pages with a novel, and then at the end, the author's like, oh, and it was actually a simulation the whole time. Haha, I got you. It's not a competition. Books are about readers and authors working together to create a story that neither of them could have formed on their own. So you don't want readers to feel cheated. However, you also want to misdirect them. And a great analogy for this is Penn and Teller, the magicians, who I was fortunate to see a few months ago when I was in Vegas in America. They don't pretend to have magical powers. They're magicians. They don't say, ooh, I've got magical sorcery powers. They acknowledge, and this was one thing that Penn actually said in the show, they acknowledge that they're going to lie to you. They're going to trick you. They're going to fool you. And there's no mysticism behind it. It's just a knowledge of maths, knowledge of misdirection. And this actually makes it way more engaging for me because now you're searching for the holes. You're trying to expose them. And it just creates this extra level of engagement. It's the same deal in stories. J.K. Rowling plays fair. Everything you need to know in the Harry Potter series is given to you well before it comes into play. This goes so far as to consider the fact that there's not a single new character, to my knowledge, introduced in The Deathly Hallows, which is the last book in the series. All of the pieces are in play. Sure, there's a few magical concepts maybe introduced in that book, but all of the major characters, they're all introduced. Everything is in play. It's the ultimate demonstration of a fair magic trick. So as promised, I'm going to be talking about four tactics for disguising information, and each tactic, through the use of various synonyms, starts with an M. Number one is minimization. Number two is misdirection. Number three is misinterpretation. And number four is multiplicity. That was a hard one to start with M, but you know, I struggled through it for you guys, so better appreciate it. Okay, so these tactics are used as ways to disguise exposition and convey foreshadowing to readers in really subtle ways. Let's start with number one, minimization. This is all about making things seem less important. So why is this useful? You've got to consider reader attention. It's all about examining and directing where people are focusing. Generally, we focus on the first things and the last things. If you think about any one of the Harry Potter books, you can probably really specifically recount how it begins. Most of them begin in the same place, which is helpful, and most of them end at the same place, which is helpful as well. But in general, in most stories, you can walk away from it with a good understanding of what happened first and what happened last. And that's a combination of our first impressions bias and the recency bias. So first impressions are obviously critical, and that massively forms our bias for what's happening down the road. And then recency bias is the tendency to overvalue whatever you have heard most recently. So in this case, the last information you have heard. Now, this gives you a window, the window of the middle. So let's look at a specific example from Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix to analyze this in action. So the scene is from The Noble and Most Ancient House of Black, which is a chapter in Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, and it goes like this. Quote, "They found an unpleasant-looking silver instrument, something like a many-legged pair of tweezers, which scuttled up Harry's arm like a spider when he picked it up, and attempted to puncture his skin. Sirius seized it and smashed it with a heavy book entitled Nature's Nobility, A Wizarding Genealogy. There was a musical box that emitted a faintly sinister, tinkling tone when wound, and they found themselves becoming curiously weak and sleepy, until Ginny had the sense to slam the lid shut. A heavy locket that none of them could open, a number of ancient seals, and, in a dusty box, an Order of Merlin, first class, that had been awarded to Sirius's grandfather for services to the ministry." End quote. So this is a passage where the main characters are cleaning the Grimmauld Place, which is the Order of the Phoenix's hideout in Book 5 of the Harry Potter books. Now, there's actually a very important thing set up in this passage. So on the surface, it seems like just sort of a fun, oh, here's some like wacky magical cleaning scenes that show that nothing in the magical world is safe. Even the things as banal as cleaning can be dangerous. That's what it is on the surface. But on a deeper level, you'll notice there's a mention in there about a heavy locket. And that locket is revealed in Book 7, which is two books later, to be a Horcrux, which is something that they actually have to struggle really hard to find, and it takes them ages to rescue it. And if they'd just known it was a Horcrux in this book, Book 7 would have been a lot easier, basically. So this throwaway, wacky piece of description actually turns out to be really important later. And what we see in this scene is that the Horcrux, this heavy locket, it's placed in the very middle of this description. So this paragraph starts with a description of these tweezers that just like randomly run up Harry's arm and try to like stab him. And then it ends with a very, very specific description of this award that one of Sirius Black's ancestors got. And the locket is just in the middle. And by having it in the middle of this fairly chunky paragraph that goes for about 12 lines or so, it's really hard to notice. And the reason for that is that, again, we have a bias for what information is presented to us. First, the kind of first impressions bias, and then we have a bias for the information that is presented to us last, the recency bias. So by having something in the middle, you are reducing the physical amount of attention a thing gets. So if you are needing to hide something that you still want to let readers know about, and you're providing a list of, say, three things, then the thing you want to hide, you probably want to put in the middle, because that's where readers are going to focus the less. So tactic number two for disguising information is misdirection, which is where you make unimportant things seem important, essentially creating red herrings. So, speaking of something that is red, in The Goblet of Fire, which is the Harry Potter book, the Weasley twins, who are redheads, are established as being up to something possibly dodgy, and for a lot of the book, you don't actually know what's going on, but then at the end, it's revealed that it's totally innocuous, and really, it was just them trying to basically get back money from someone who'd promised them money, and it didn't have any massive relevance to the plot in the way that was inferred and set up. So red herrings are really valuable, because if you follow the conventional wisdom of making sure that everything in your book is needed to be there for the plot to work, then you may end up with a really pared down, lean plot. And if it's really lean, it's super easy to see the things that you're hiding. Whereas if you add a bit of fat to that plot, add a bit of red herrings to that plot, now you're talking. Now it's really hard for readers to distinguish the noise from the signal. And obviously you don't want to go too overboard with this, because readers will feel cheated if everything is a red herring. But the occasional red herring can work wonders. If you want to see a great red herring in action, I would totally recommend this very famous video where you as an audience you're watching, I believe it is, six people on a screen. Three of the people are in white shirts, three of the people are in black shirts, and there's two balls between them. And over the next couple of minutes, you have to count how many times the balls are passed between the people with the white shirts and how many times the balls are passed amongst the people with the black shirts. And you're focusing really intently on this. And then at the end of 2 minutes, you're like, okay, cool, time's up. How many times did they pass it? Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, here was the answer. Great. Did you see the gorilla that walked through the catches? And people in the audience will go, huh? What? Gorilla? What are you talking about? And then they'll play the video back. And right in the middle of the people throwing the ball to each other, a gorilla will walk through. Not a real gorilla, just a guy dressed in a gorilla outfit. But it's stunning. How many people don't notice it? I don't think I noticed it when I first saw it. And that's because you've been told to focus on the balls being thrown amongst each other. You've been focusing on the red herrings. So tactic number three is misinterpretation. This is where you give readers the map, but you give it to them upside down and you don't exactly try to put it the right way up. In the first book, The Philosopher's Stone, we see this with Snape and Quirrell. There's many conversations between these two characters where Harry sees Snape threatening Quirrell, and Harry infers that Snape is the bad guy in this situation and Quirrell is just this innocent teacher who is suffering from Snape's threatening, when in reality, Quirrell is actually working for Lord Voldemort and he's the true villain of this book. Another more obvious example of this is in a opening scene in this book where Harry looks at the back of Quirrell's head and then just moves his eyes and looks at Snape, who's just past Quirrell, and then Harry's scar hurts. And Harry assumes that his scar is hurting because he looked at Snape. But really, it's hurting because he looked at the back of Quirrell's head, where Lord Voldemort is hiding underneath Quirrell's turban. So again, misinterpretation, it's all about giving readers the map, but intentionally making sure that they do not derive the correct meaning from it. And in fact, doing everything you can to make them believe that, yes, that's correct, good sir, the map totally should be upside down like that, that's the only way you'll reach the destination. Go along now, see ya, and then you run off. Tactic number four, multiplicity. Hiding the tree in the forest. So this is basically about quantity. There is a lot going on in the Harry Potter books. This is an excellent design choice, because when there's multiple plot threads, tons of specific world-building details, and countless characters, you never know which one is the important one. until it's too late. And thinking back to that initial scene that I extracted from Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix a bit earlier, what makes this scene really useful is the amount of specificity and quantity of world-building details in this one paragraph. In this one paragraph, we learn that apparently tweezers can kill you in the Harry Potter universe. We learn that Sirius Black's ancestors probably bribed the Ministry of Magic and that the Ministry of Magic is probably corrupt. We also found that there's this weird music box that can probably give you a coma. And all of these details are fleshed out in such specific, interesting detail that you just can't help being distracted by them. There's so many fireworks going off above that you don't notice the pickpocket who walks right up in front of you and steals the fairy floss out of your hand. So this is a really useful tactic and a really easy one to implement in your stories, especially if you have a big ensemble cast and a lot of multiple plot threads, as Harry Potter does. As I've discussed before, J.K. Rowling intentionally designed the Harry Potter books with multiple plot arcs in mind. Her process was essentially making a big table, and then down the one side of the table is all the chapters, and down the other side of the table, in the other axis, is all the plot arcs. And then this basically allowed her to make sure she was constantly weaving and bobbing these different plot threads through the book. And when you've got all that weaving and bobbing going on, it's really, really easy to just sneak some little things in there that don't get noticed because there is so much noise going on. So those are our four tactics for disguising information. The first one was minimization, which is where you make things seem less important. The second was misdirection, where you make unimportant things seem important. The third was misinterpretation, which is where you give readers information, but make sure that they interpret it incorrectly. And number four was multiplicity, having a ton of information as a smokescreen for the few important signals amongst that noise. Rowling's ability to hide important information doesn't just make the Harry Potter novels compulsively page-turning on the first read. It also makes the second read better. That's because now you're looking for the clues, seeing the clues, and smacking your head for not figuring it out earlier. And that, dear listener, is the true power of subtle exposition. And that's our episode. Thank you so much for listening to the Novel Analyst Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, don't leave a review. As much as I love reviews, I would much prefer you to go and tell a fellow Harry Potter friend, a fellow writing friend, about this episode. Share it with them. Tell them why it's awesome, if you thought it was awesome, that is. And hopefully they will get a lot of useful information from this, and hopefully it will help their own writing, and then they'll be in debt to you forever, and when they become a multi-billionaire author, they'll pay you 50% of their royalties. Probably. I can't guarantee that. Anyway, that has been our episode. I'll see you next time.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.